Morning. Today's daf in Zvachim is Kuf Yud. We are on Kuf Tes Amud Beis. We are at the Mishnah. Continuing our discussion on Shechut Echutz, we have a couple more blah to go before we get to the last final parak of the Masechta. Our Mishnah is going to be continuing the discussion of exactly how much you have to bring outside in order to violate the Isser of Hela B'chutz. As we've discussed already, noted a number of times, there are two Isserim as relates to offering something outside the Beis HaMikdash. There is Shechut Echutz and Hela B'chutz, shechting a carbon outside the Beis HaMikdash. And we say outside the area of the Beis HaMikdash, again, as we learned earlier in the parak, it's the outside of the Azara, or offering something outside of the Azara. Under both of those circumstances, one would be subject to the subject to a kares penalty if done b'mezid, done b'shogeg, b'chav v'karben chatas. There is also, we can also add to that, there's Rikas dam b'chutz, although not explicitly mentioned in the Torah, but learned by Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel a couple dapim ago, within this perek, is subject also to an iser. Exactly what the iser is, that was machlokas tanaim, under what category it falls under. That was back on Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph. Machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. But in any event, see, basically you have two choices. It's either shchutech or it's a hela b'chutz. But in any event, these are the yisurim that we've been discussing last number of days in the Masechta, and we are continuing. The Mishnah over here now is going to continue to talk about offering things outside. The Mishnah over here is primarily going to be dealing with things which serve as a matir. In other words, by a karban, so the offering of one part of a karban permits the consumption of another part of the karban. When we say consumption, it could either be human consumption or mizbeach consumption. But either way, so when we're talking about a matir is obviously a much more sensitive area, meaning because it is the cause, it's literally the matir, for that which is going to be consumed by other things. So it could be that the requirement of a matir is just simply more going to be on a higher threshold, on a higher plane, than that of others. And you'll see what I mean by that as we go through the Mishnah. So the Mishnah over here talks about the kmitza, the kometz. So the kometz is the part of the mincha that is taken by the kohen. It's a fistful of the flour that's taken by the kohen and placed on the top of the mizbeach. V'halevona. And also Lavona. Now, Lavona over here, we're talking about the Lavona of a mincha, meaning in a standard mincha, so you had, after it was put into a kli, the flour, so then you had a layer of Lavona that was layered on top. Then what happened is that the Lavona was taken off, and the Lavona also was burnt on the top of the Mizbech. So really, when it comes to standard mincha, so you had two matirin for every standard mincha. You had the Lavona, which was put onto the Mizbech, and you also had the Kemitza as well, of the flour. So when we say Kometz v'halavona, we're actually talking about the two matirin of every standard mincha. Ha-Ketoris. Now the Ketoris is the incense that's burned. So it's burned daily. Half of it, pras, was burned in the morning, and half of it was burned in the afternoon. So u'minchas kohanim. Minchas kohen, what's unique about a mincha that's offered by any kohen, is that it is entirely burnt on the mizbeach, as opposed to a standard mincha that's offered by a non-kohen, where a kometz goes of it on to the mizbeach, and the rest of it is eaten by kohanim. Minchas kohen which is offered by a kohen, meaning it's actually owned by a kohen, so he donated it, so that entire mincha has to be burned, both the kmitza and the shirayim as well. So minchas kohanim, minchas kohen mashiach, kohen gadol, offers a mincha daily. Obviously, it is totally burnt. It's offered by a kohen, not just any kohen, the kohen gadol. Uminchas nesachim. Minchas nesachim is all the nesachim that we've been describing periodically throughout this mesechta. It's the libations that come together with every karban. So all these circumstances, shehikriv me'achos mehem kizayis b'chutz chayev. So the Tanakhama of our Mishnah is of the opinion that fine. So in other words, all these things are things that go up onto the Mizbeach, and therefore if I were to take a significant amount of any of these items, significant amount is usually in Halacha a Kezayis, here no different, it would be a Kezayis, and I take it and offer it outside, so one would be Chayav. That is the opinion of the Tanakhama. That is the starting point of the Mishnah. Rebbe Lazar, Poter, Ashi, Akriv, Kulan. Now Rebbe Lazar disagrees. Rebbe Lazar says that the only way that one would have a liability if offering any one of the things that we just mentioned in the Mishnah is that you have to offer its entirety. You cannot offer just simply an amount of it, not even a significant amount of it, not even a kezayis, but you have to offer all of it. Why? Why, according to Rabbi Lazar, do you have to offer all of it? So Rashi over here points out. Now Rashi over here, I'm going to start in the Rashi with the words Rabbi Lazar. It's a couple lines above where we are in the Gemara. It's in the middle of a Rashi. Rabbi Elazar nami midlo paligareisha gabi ola hachinami darish le oso ashir haktara karabanan. So Rashi points out, you notice that in the previous Mishnah, when we're talking about the Karban Ola and how much of the Karban Ola needs to be offered outside in order to violate Shchut Echutz, or I should say better, Hela Bechutz. So you notice above we said that you only need a Kazayas of Ola, and you'll notice that in the previous Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer didn't disagree. Okay. So that means to say that Rabbi Eliezer fundamentally agrees that a kazayis is a significant amount, and it would be a shear, and you would be chayiv on hela b'chutz, even if it were just a kazayis. So what's going on over here in our Mishnah? So Rashi goes on to explain. Umiu ola de lo mishla b'chisarim dechol atzma b'dan tluya kaparasa chay b'chazayis. Rashi says, you see, as it relates to the carbon ola, so there's no idea of chisaron, meaning it's deficient. What does that mean, it's deficient? You sprinkle the blood. You now have the right and the allowance to take the carbon ola, every part of the carbon ola, and put on the mizbech, and burn on the mizbech. But really, the key component of a carbon ola is the blood. Blood is the matir. The carbon ola is just simply now going to be the result of having sprinkled the blood. And so as it relates to the carbon ola, so you're going to be chai for hela b'chutz if you put any of the carbon ola, I don't mean any, but at least a kezais of the carbon ola on a mizbech outside of the azara. Avabahani palik. But in all these things that we mentioned on our Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer is arguing. Why? Dekasavar. Kometz kula hainu shir haktaraso. Af bifnim. Because as far as how much kometz do you need to put up onto the mizbech in order for the kometz to work, Rabbi Eliezer says all of it. All of it. So in other words, again, we keep going to that formula, that equation, that you're only violating hela b'chutz if it's the requisite amount that needs to go inside. When I say inside, meaning on the outer mizbech in the azara. So once you have that formula, so the only amount of komets that becomes acceptable is all of the komets. So therefore, the only time that you violate hela b'chutz is if you offer all the komets outside. Rashi continues. Everything we mentioned, the Mishnah is a matir. The Ketoris is a little. I'm trying to think it through in terms of every example that was given in the Mishnah. So the Ketoris is, it's hard to describe the Ketoris as a matir. What is the Ketoris being matir? I don't have an answer. So but anyway, Rashi says, v'chein kulam shekulam matir nhein kol zman shelo kirvu kulam lo havi haktara latzeis balam yidei chavasam. With everything that we just mentioned in our Mishnah, so you have to offer all of it in order to be chayev. And so therefore, as Rabbi Elazar says, since that's the case, so therefore, if you offer some of it outside, even if it's most of it outside of the Beis HaMikdash, you're not in violation of Hela B'chutz. Ula Rabbanan Bahani Nami Havya Haktarasam Bechazai Secha Dekula Kayem V'lo Chesru Kodem Haktarasam Tanam B'mnachos Hikter Komtza Pamayim K'shir Hilcha Chaktarihi. Now, as far as the Chachamim are concerned, so a Kazayis of Matir is significant. Now, granted, Rashi notes, and we're going to speak this out as we go through the Gemara. Even according to the Chachamim, you cannot have a deficiency, meaning you can't have part of it missing, part of it going away. But in terms of what is considered significant haktara, even if I burn just a kazayis of it, that's significant. Therefore, if I take a kazayis of it and burning outside, I'm going to be chayv as well. Okay, so Adkan, that takes us to the first part of the Mishnah. A machlok is between the Chacham and Rav Elazar in terms of how much matir is offered outside in order to be chayv on the Isser of Hela B'chutz. Continuing in the Mishnah. V'kulon she'ikru b'fnim v'shayir mehem kezayis v'ikru v'b'chutz chayiv. Now, if you offer, let's say, the majority of it inside, but you left a kezayis, and you offer that kezayis outside, you're going to be chayv, and this would work even according to Rabbi Eliezer. And the reason is because this is the last kezayis of the matir. And since this represents the last of the matir, therefore you're going to be chayev. Now, if you have a chisaron, and then you offer the matir outside, you're going to be patir, as I already pointed out, but here's the Mishnah saying it. In other words, when it comes to a matir, even the chachamim say that you can't have a chisaron. You can't have any kind of deficiency. Once you either physically lose or halachically lose any of the matir, so then it's not going to be effective. And if it's not going to be effective inside, you're not violating hela b'chutz outside. And then finally, one last line of the Mishnah, Makrav Kachim v'imurim b'chutz chayev. If I take the carbon and the imurim and I offer it outside, I'm going to be chayev. It sounds like a pretty straightforward statement. If it's talking about the carbon ola, we've already covered that territory. Most probably, this is not talking about a carbon ola. That only begs the question, which I know the Gemara is going to ask because, you know, I looked ahead. But it begs the question, if it's not talking about a carbon ola, if it's talking about any other carbon, a chatas and asham, so the meat is eaten by the Kohanim. So the Mishnah says that if I take carbon and imurim and I bring it outside, I'm going to be chayav. Well, what do you mean? If we're talking about the meat of an asham or the meat of a chatas or any other carbon for that matter, so that doesn't go on the mizbeach. If it doesn't go on the mizbeach, you're not violating hela b'chutz. So this last line of the Mishnah is a little bit tricky. We're going to come back to that last line of the Mishnah later this morning. We're starting with the Gemara Tanur Rabbanan Hamakter Kezayis B'chutz Chayev. If I offer a kezayis of, if I burn a kezayis outside, I'm going to be chayev. And then the Mishnah, and then the Braisa goes on to say, Chatzi pras bifnim. Now, if I offer half of the pras of the Ketoris inside, I'm going to be pater. Now, pater is a strange word to use. Pater is not only a strange word to use, it's hard to understand. What does that mean, pater? So, Kasa gadachamai pater, pater zar. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what. So maybe what the word pater over here means is that it's pater zar. The meaning, as Rashi points out over here, if we're not talking about a zar, what does the word pater have anything to do over here? You offered a pras of Ketores in the Beis HaMikdash. That's exactly what you were supposed to do. And why are we using the word pater? So so right now the Gemara says that pater means that if a non-Kohen were to do it, so he would be pater. Now the Gemara says that's hard to understand. Amai haktarihi. And so if he's a non-Kohen and he was offered something which is a valid amount, so he shouldn't be pater. In other words, you're burning what you're supposed to be burning. And it's being done by non-Kohen. So that doesn't make any sense. So Amar Rabbi Zeir.
He's burning less than the shield,
right? Well, in other words, the Ketoros is divided. Half of it is offered in the morning, half of it's offered in the afternoon. So it's
Chotzi Pras.
Hamakter Kiz Chotzi Pras Bifnim. Okay. So Amar Rabbi Zeir, Amar Rabbi Chista, Amar Rabbi Yirmiya Bar Abba, Amar Rav, my pater Tzibur. So the Gemara says, now the word pater over here means pater tzibur, meaning that the tzibur is going to be exempted, meaning check, meaning they did what they were supposed to do. And why? So Rashi over here says pater tzibur de yatsi de chavasim de kizayis havia hakatara, because in other words we got a kizayis up there, and in other words, right, as you pointed out, meaning it's less than it's chatzi pras, it's half of a pras, but half of a pras still represents more than a kezayis, and a kezayis is significant. And again, that would be the sheet of the chachamim that we learned in the Mishnah. Am Reb Zeri kashli akashli. Reb Zeri says, look, okay, I got it. I learned the brisa. The word pater didn't bother me. In fact, I'll say the pshat like we just said. But I'll tell you what does bother me. Had Amar Rav Allah b'hafil Reb Eliezer modeh. So but what bothers me is a statement made by Rav. Because Rav says, you know that brisa that we just learned together, that if I burn the ketores, so and I take a kezayis and I burn it outside, you're going to be chayv. And if I take a chatzi pras and I burn inside, you're going to be pater. And we learned together, pater means you get a check because we did burn a kezayis. To which the Gemara says, Rav had a comment on that brisa, which is Rabbi Elazar agrees to that brisa. And what is Rav talking about? Reb Zeri says, that's the part that bothers me. Rabbi Elazar agrees to that? No, he doesn't. We learned together in the Mishnah that anytime we're talking about something that needs to be burnt in its entirety, like a kemitza, like the lavona, like the ketores, anything has to be burnt in its entirety will only be valid when it's burnt in its entirety. How can you tell me that Rabbi Eliezer agrees with the brisa that we just learned together? So, afilu Rabbi Eliezer modeh d'ha Rabbi Eliezer lav haktara hi kamar. According to Rabbi Eliezer, that's not a haktara. And if it's not a haktara, you don't get a check. So what? That's the part I don't get. What's Rav talking about? So the Gemara says like this. Okay. So if we're talking about the haktara, the burning of incense that's done in the heichal, so there is no debate. The debate exists in terms of the haktara that's done inside. Now, when we say the haktara that's done inside, what are we talking about when we're talking about haktara that's done inside? So we're talking about Yom Kippur. So on Yom Kippur, so we take ketores, we take incense. We over here is a royal we. The Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol is going to take Ketores on Yom Kippur, and Malo Chafnav is going to be taking an amount that's held in his fistful. It's more than a fistful. It's cupped hands. But Malo Chafnav, he takes that amount of Ketores, he goes into the Kodesh Kodashim, and he burns it there. In other words, he has a shovel of hot coal. He puts the Ketores on the shovel. And it creates a smoke, and the smoke now goes in. I'm sorry, goes wrong preposition. The smoke goes up, and the covers the it blankets the entire top area of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, runs down the walls. Okay, I remember there was a family who knew how to create the Ketores, prepare the Ketores, so that it would burn exactly in the way that I just described. Anyway, so the Gemara says, as far as the Machlokas is concerned between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim as it relates to Ketores, that's only Behaktara Dipnim, Mar Savar, because one is of the opinion Malocha Chafnav Davka. The Torah gives proportions, exact proportions in terms of how much Ketores has to be burned in Yom Kippur. The Torah says Malo Chafnav. Now, when I say exact proportions, by the way, it is dependent on the Kohen. In other words, but still, in other words, whoever the Kohen Gadol is at the time, so his hands now become the dimensions of how much Ketores has to be burned on Yom Kippur. Uman Savra Malo Chafnav Lav Davka. And the other opinion says, no, that even on Yom Kippur, when we say Malo Chafnav, when the Torah says Malo Chafnav, doesn't have to be exactly Malo Chafnav, as long as it has a minimum of a Kezais. So Amale Abai Vahaki Kesive Chukav Vahaktar Depnimu Dekesive. So Abai says that's really hard to entertain. That the only time that Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim are debating as it relates to the Ketores of Yom Kippur, and when the Torah says Malo Chafnav, we're actually debating whether the Torah is meant to be said literally or as long as you're around that area, that's fine. Doesn't have to be a full Malo Chafnav. It's really hard to understand. On top of that, the Torah says Chuka, and whenever we have the Torah says the word Chuka, that means that this is the way it has to be done, with no room for any kind of negotiation. So how can you tell me that in Yom Kippur the Ketores of Malo Chafnav of Yom Kippur is subject to variation? It's hard to understand. Hard to imagine. El Amar Abai Baktar Bifnin Kulam Lo Pligi. So Abai says, look, as far as I'm concerned, the Ketores that's done on Yom Kippur for the Kohen Gadol with the Malo Chafnav, that is non-negotiable. It is a Malo Chafnav. No one even argues that. That is Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim both agree. Ki Pligi Baktar De Chutz. What we're arguing about is the Haktar that's done outside. Now again, everything is relative over here. When we say Chutz, we don't mean outside the Beis HaMikdash. We mean in the Heichal. Just simply chutz over here means outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. In other words, the Ketores that's burned on the Mizbeach HaZahav, that is in the Heichal, but outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Marzava Yafinan Pnei Mechutz, Marzava Lo Yafinan. And now, here's the machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim. Our starting point is that everyone agrees that in Yom Kippur, for the Ketores that's done in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it has to be Malo Chafnav, exactly, nothing less than Malo Chafnav. That's the starting point. Everyone agrees to that. And now the debate is that when the Torah also gives a shear for how much Ketores has to be burned outside here, meaning in the Heichal, so is it that we're going to be learning it from Yom Kippur, right? That's the position of Yafinan Pnim Michutz. I'm sorry. Ki Plig Baktar De Chutz Marsav Yafinan Pnim Michutz or Marsav Lo Yafinan. Yeah. So do we learn one from the other? So Amar Rava Hashta Chutz Michutz Lo Yafi Rabbanan Pnim Michutz Mibaye. So the Gemara says, well, it's hard to imagine because we're not even going to learn chutz from chutz, which the Gemara is going to explain in just a moment what that means. So pnimi chutz, you mean to tell me that they're going to learn? So mahi, so the Gemara says, what did you mean by that comment? So Tanya, the Gemara quotes a brisa. Yochel hamala pachus mikazayis komets, pachus mikazayis imurim, v'amenasech pachus mishloshaluge yayin, and pachus migimaluge mayim yehechayev. The brisa over here entertains the following havamina. Now it's a havamina. But if I offer less than a kezayis of kemitza, or less than a kezayis of imurim, or less than a nisuch of 3 lugin of wine, 3 lugin of wine is the base minimum amount of wine that's going to be offered as nisachim, or less than 3 lugin of water, so you might have thought that you would be chayev, tamalam or laso, salah shalom chayev, inu chayev ala chaser. So the Braisa teaches us that it has to be shalom, meaning that in order to be chayev, it has to be a full amount. Anything less than a kezayis by imurim is not full. Anything less than 3 lugin as it relates to wine is just simply not a full amount. So the Gemara says, "Va'apachus mishoshes lugim deisbu kamazesim v'lo yalfi rabbanan chutz mechutz." Now, let's consider. If let's say I have less than 3 lugin of wine, let's say I have 2 lugin of wine. 2 lugin of wine still represents a lot of kezayisim, meaning so there are a lot of kezayisim of kezayis is a volume, right? The volume of an olive. So even in 2 lugin, you're going to be having multiple kezesim in those 2 lugin. But why is that not considered a hak? Why is one not violating this in the Torah? And the answer is because for wine, the Torah gives the base amount of 3 lugin. So even though it has multiple kezesim in there, that's not good enough. So what do you see? That when it comes to even comparing one type of carbon to another, we don't learn one from the other. Meaning even though two lugan of wine has many kezesim, doesn't matter. Wine is different. Imurim is different. So I'm not prepared to learn one carbon from another type of carbon. And so if I'm not learning one type of carbon to another type of carbon, you mean to tell me that by Ketores, we are going to be learning one type of Ketores from another type of Ketores? So Allah Ama Rava Kagon. So Rava says like this. Okay. So as far as the Mishnah is concerned, as far as the Brisa is concerned, we're talking about Haktara in the Heichal. So and we're talking about Haktara that's done in the Heichal. And a Haktara done in the Heichal is in fact considered a Haktara, even if it's done with a Kezias. So that's why the Brisa says that you're going to be Chayev. Even Rabbi Lazar is going to agree with that, as Rav himself pointed out. And so the Gemara says, and so if all this is true, so then Elam Arava Kigon de Kavinu Shnei Chatzai Pras Bimana. So what I did is I take two Chatzi Prases and I put it into one mana. Now, I put it into one Kli. So is that one Kli now going to combine everything? Marsavar Kviyus Mana Milsihi or Marsavar Lav Milsihi? And the Gemara says, as far as taking half portions and putting it into one kli, so the Gemara says, that's the machlokas between Rebbe Lez and the Chachamim. Rashi, on the very top of the Amud, I know we're in the middle of a Rashi, Kasav Rebbe Lez, Kviyasa Damana Milsehi, Ho, Venasan, Shnei Chatzai, Prasbikli, Haktaris Hechel, Kave Mana. So the mana, meaning the kli now that's put in, is going to be the Kviyas. It will establish it, it will combine it. Vichasa Koshu Mifsal. At this point now going forward, if any of it becomes deficient, so now it's going to be, it's simply not going to work. Hilkach b'chutz l'mechayv ashi yakriv eskulo. Now, if I take this and I offer it outside, so I have to offer all of it in order to be chayev. Whereas according to the Chachamim, even though I took the chatzi pras and I put it, and I took two of them, and I put it into a kli, the kli does not unify it. In other words, it's still considered kataris, and if I take even just a kezias of it and offer it outside, you're going to be chayv on hela b'chutz. So Amar Rav Hashlaman de Amar Kviyasa de Mana velo klumhu. So the Gemara says like this. Okay. So now what we just learned together, according to Rava, is that really what is at issue is over here is the following. In other words, as far as the kataris is concerned, even taking a kezias of kataris and burning it outside, one is going to be chayv. The only issue now over here is that when I put it into a kli, does the kli unify it? And so that's the machlokes between Rav Elazar and the Chachamim. And the Chachamim say that a kli does not unify it. So in other words, I could still take a kezias of it and offer it outside and be chayev. So the Gemara says if that's true, so let's just play this out in other scenarios. Let's say kavashisha lapar. So let's say I take six lugin of wine and dedicate it for a par. Meaning for a par, that's the bit largest animal. The nesachim needed for a par is six lugin, right? That's chatzi ahin. Half of a hin is 12 lugin. So six, and I put it into a kli. So at this point in time now, you'll say, okay, fine, now all six have been unified. That's if you subscribe to this idea that a mana is koveya. But if a mana is not koveya, so I have, what do I have in the kli? I have six lugin, but it's not one unified amount. And then let's say now I take four lugin of it, and I offer it outside, so you're going to be chayv. But you didn't offer all six. Doesn't matter. Four is still a significant number. Right? In other words, as long as it's three or greater than three, so it's a significant amount. And because the mana wasn't koveya, so therefore taking four out would be a violation. Shiru uin la'il, because four would be good for a ram. Kava arba la'il mashuk meim shosha v'krivam b'chutz chayiv. Shiru uin la'keves. Chasu koshu v'krivam b'chutz pater. Okay. And and if I took four and put it into a kli, and again, if I subscribe to the viewpoint that a kli is not considered a koveya, so then if I took three of it out and offered outside, I'd be in violation because three would be good for a kevis. And oh, by the way, he concludes that if I'm chaser kolshehu, in other words, let's say I didn't take three of four, I didn't take four of six, but in other words, but I had six and then I was chaser, and then I lost a little bit of it. So like we already discussed back in the Mishnah, once you lose a little bit of it, so then that's it. You're not going to be in violation of Hela B'chutz. Okay. Rav Ashi Amar, Nisuch Me'aktara Lo Yafi. Now, what we're doing now is that we are going back to the question the Gemara asked previously. Meaning, we were entertaining the idea that as it relates to the Maloch Hafnav of Yom Kippur, everyone agrees you need a full amount. And the only going to be chayv when you offer all of it. And then the only question is whether that translates over to regular Ketaris that's burned on a daily basis. And the Gemara says, well, I don't understand. We don't learn our chutz from chutz, so how can we learn our chutz from panim? That was the question. And now Rav Ashi says, you know what? I think I have a simple answer. And the answer is very simple. Meaning, we don't learn our chutz from chutz because nisuch mehaktara lo yalfe. Meaning, what was our question? Well, by the Nesachim, it's three lugin. Three lugin? Three lugin has multiple kazesim in there. So Rav Ashi says, that's really nice. I'm glad it has multiple kazesim. But I can't take a shear that's relevant to burning and apply it to something that is Nesachim, which is poured on the Mizbeach. Those are two different types of presentations to the Mizbeach, and I simply can't learn one from the other. Nisuch me'achtar lo yalfi, Rabbanan. Af agav dechutz mechutz, lo yalfi. I'm not going to learn out an act of nisachim, which is an act of pouring, to the act of haktar, which is an act of burning. However, haktar me'achtar yalfi, af agav dechutz mipnim. But as it relates to burning kataris and burning kataris, okay, so one is done inside, one's done outside. But easily I can learn one from the other because that is, both of them are just the same acts of burning. It's just the location is different. So Rav Ashi says, the fact that I'm prepared to learn chutz mipnim makes much more sense if the act is the same, more so than I'm ready to learn out an act of nisuch to an act of haktara. Okay. Ibai lo. Right. Agreed.
Yes,
agreed. Right, but in other words, but the question is that we all agree that Maloch Hafnav has to be kulo. And the only now question is that do we take that requirement and apply it now to the Ketaris of the outside? Ibailu, we are on Kuf Yud Amad Aleph. I'm sorry, Vekulin Shechesra. So now we talked about a Chisaron, meaning we all are in agreement. The disagreement is how much of it needs to be offered in order to be Chayv and Hela B'chutz. Tanakam of Remishan says the Kazayas. Rabbi Eliezer says all of it, all or nothing, meaning you either offer all of it or you're not going to be Chayv. That part's clear. What's also clear in the Mishnah is that if you're missing any of it, any of the matir, so that's it. The matir no longer works, and consequently, you're not violating Hela B'chutz if you offer that outside. Ibailu chisaron dechutz shmei chisaron o lo shmei chisaron. The Gemara over here has, it's really, if you think about it, it's such a mind-bending question. It's from a thinking standpoint, it's really wonderful. Look. You take the matir of the kmitza or any of the other matirim that we described in the Mishnah. Okay, in order to violate Hela B'chutz, so what do you have to do? It's very simple. You have to take it outside of the Azara. Once you take it outside of the Azara, you know really it becomes disqualified. Right. Meaning it's one of the conundrums of this whole idea of Hela B'chutz, is that the moment that you take it outside of the Azara, it becomes disqualified. And yet, because I could have brought it inside, not now anymore, but I could have brought it inside on the Mizbeach in the Azara, so by now taking it and bringing it outside, so now I'm going to be in violation of Hela B'chutz. Okay, fine. But the Gemara now wonders, look, when we said regarding all these matirin, that if I'm missing any of it, so it no longer works on the Mizbeach in the Azara, so therefore I'm no longer violating Hela B'chutz. But I wonder, says the Gemara, let's say you take the matir in its totality outside of the Azara, and after you take it out, which, by the way, now becomes disqualified. And after I take it out, then it becomes chaser. At that point in time now, are we going to say, well, you don't have the requisite amount? I know I don't have the requisite amount, but let's be honest with one another. It's puzzle anyway. So we say chisaron is a deal breaker. That if it becomes deficient, it's a deal breaker. But right, in other words, correct. But in other words, but I already took it outside. So, if so, mali chaser. Now, the next word should be probably mali yotze. So, in other words, so I took it outside. I already disqualify it. So, what do you want to throw at me? Ooh, there's another disqualification. It's deficient. You're missing some of it. Okay, But it's already disqualified. It's already gone through Yotzei. And now what do you want to do? You want to pile on and you want to tell me, oh, but it's also chaser? Or maybe no. Meaning, look, it's just part of the understanding of Hela Bechot, so you're taking it outside. Meaning, okay, of course it's a psul, of course it disqualifies, of course. But you're only talking about it simply because that's the Isser in the Torah of Hela Bechot. So, okay, yes, you violated Yotzei. Yes, now it's outside. But maybe in terms of the requirements of when are you violating the Isser, I need all or nothing. I need all of it, or I'm not violating. Meaning once it becomes chaser, once it becomes deficient, once I lose a little bit of the kemitza, or a little bit of it becomes tummy, whatever the case is, so then it would simply not violate, it would not hit the threshold in violating the Isser of Hela Bechutz.
Because it wouldn't be good bifnim.
Right, correct. So I'm Rabbi Tashmas. Rabbi says, okay, so let's take a look at our Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer Poter Achi Yakriv is Kulo. Now Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah says that you're going to be Poter, you're not violating Hela Bechutz until you offer all of the Matir. So Amalei Rava Barachan Labai Midi Rabbi Eliezer Pashit Mar Amalei Befir Shmir Limine Derav Ad Kan Lo Pligi Rabbana Led Rabbi Eliezer Ela De Isa Be'inei. Well, you're answering the question from Rabbi Eliezer. So you know the Chachamim Adkan lo pligi rabbana led Rabbi Eliezer ela di isa beinei. The only time the Chachamim argue with Rabbi Eliezer is only when it's all there. Ava bechisarn mo delei dechaser bechutz lo dechaser. I'm sorry, lo dechaser bifnim. But you know, we're talking about an issue where there is no debate between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim are arguing, that part's true, but they're only arguing about how much of it do I need to offer outside in order to be chayv and hela b'chutz? But the assumption is, the starting point is, I need all of it. Meaning all of it has to be in existence. Once some of it now becomes missing, goes missing, we have agreement between Rebbe Elazar and the Chachamim that it simply doesn't work. So you're quoting a line of Mishnah, but you're only quoting the line of Mishnah where Rebbe Elazar disagrees. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a scenario where they both agree. And they both agree because now it's in a situation of chaser, tashma. V'kulin shechaser v'ikriv on bechutz pater. Everyone agrees that if it's chaser and then you offer it outside, it's pater. Lav the chaser bechutz. So the Gemara says now, the Mishnah doesn't say this with super clarity, but presumably it's talking about where it went deficient, it went chaser outside. But the Gemara says not necessarily. No, the chaser bifnim. No, it went missing inside. So from that line of the Mishnah, there's just simply not enough information in order to determine our question. Okay, we're almost done with the first Mishnah this morning. We are continuing the line that we're exploring right now is that last line of the Mishnah. If you go back to where we started this morning and you look at the last line of the Mishnah, Amakriv Kachim Imurim Bechutz Chayiv, that if I take Kachim and Imurim and I offer it outside, so I'm going to be Chayiv. Now, as I already pointed out, that last line of the Mishnah, it's not talking about a carbon ola. We've covered a carbon ola. Carbon ola was already discussed in the previous Mishnah. So it's not a carbon ola. So if it's not a carbon ola, so then we're kind of stuck. Meaning, so we're talking about now taking the meat of a carbon chatzis together with its imurim and burning it outside. And here, the Gemara is, you have to really visualize this to understand the Gemara's question. But the Gemara is bothered by the following. You know, for the meat of the chatas or ashim, whatever carbon it is, it's not a carbonola. So for the meat of it, you know, you're not violating Hela Bechutz because it's not going on the Mizbech inside the Azara. It's eaten by the Kohanim. So that really is I was going to say you take it off the table, but you're not taking it off the table. But in other words, right, it's disqualified, it went outside of the Azara, etc., etc. But you're not violating Hela Bechutz for that. Meaning that's not something which brings about a chi of a Hela Bechutz. Okay. The Imurim, however, there is a violation for Hela Bechutz for the Imurim. But if you can imagine now, and please imagine with me. So I'm now on a Mizbech outside of the Azara, and I'm now taking the carbon chatas, I'm taking a limb of a carbon chatas, and I'm throwing it now on the Mizbech. So what do I have to do in order to violate the Isser of Hela Bechutz? I actually have to take the portion that was supposed to go on the inner Mizbeach and put it on the Mizbeach. But if I'm taking something else and putting it in between, when halacha we refer to that as a chatzitza. So if I'm taking the limb of an animal, the imurmer inside, so and I'm putting it on the mizbech outside of the azara, so on a technicality, but it's still a technicality, I didn't violate the isser because of the idea of chatzitza. The Gemara asks this question. Amai v'ha'ika chatzitza. So the Gemara says, isn't it a chatzitza? So the Gemara says, the Gemara gives three suggestions. Number one, Amar Shmuel kishahavcha. So Shmuel says, okay, you know what? Yeah, it would be a chatzitza if it was meat down, if it was muscle down, and the chelev, the parts of the carbon that were burnt on the, that should have gone on the mizbeach was on the top. So then you're right, it'd be a chatzitza. So what the person did is he flipped it over. So now chelev is side down. Okay, simple answer. Answer number two. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afilo Tema Shalom Havchan V'Hamani Rabbi Shimon Hid Amar Afilo Helu Al Asela Chayev. This subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon. Remember, we had a debate just a day ago. What do you have to offer it on in order to violate Hela B'chutz? Does it have to be a bona fide Mizbeach? And even when we say bona fide Mizbeach, remember we said yesterday, not like really bona fide, but in other words, it has to basically take on the status of a Mizbeach, or is it enough to just put it on a Sela? And what the Gemara now is suggesting is a Sela would be okay. Meaning, we're subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon, which is that if I put on a Sela, it would be okay. And how does that make anything different? Because if it's not a Mizbeach, it's just a Sela, so then there's no idea of Chatzitza. Meaning, Chatzitza means is that it has to be in contact with the Mizbeach. But to violate Hela B'chutz, if all I need is just simply anything, meaning even just a stone, so then there's no idea, there's no concept of chatzitza. It just has to be on an elevated area. But you don't need the actual parts to be touching the actual mizbech. And Rav Amar min b'mino in achotzeit. Now Rav is of the opinion that, what are we talking about? We're talking about chelev and the meat. Meaning we're talking about a limb of an animal. So there's muscle and there's chelev. And you know why there's no chatzitza? Because it's min b'mino. In other words, like items, similar items do not represent a chatzitza. Rashi over here, min b'mino in a chotzeit. Yeah, yeah. Not yet. No Rashi yet. Tosis over here points out, remember we learned a long time ago in the Masechta? Huh? That's coming up a little bit later on. Tosfos points out over here, remember we discussed earlier in the Masechta the idea that a Kohen's foot has to be on the floor. Right. And one of the things that we said is that Kohen can't be standing on any item separating his feet from the floor, not even another Kohen's foot. And so Tosfos is just curious, you know, if you're stepping on somebody else's foot, that's min b'mino. So that shouldn't serve as a chatzitza. Much like we just learned in our Gemara over here, that meat and chelev are coming from the same animal and therefore doesn't represent a chatzitza. So Tosfos over here says when we're talking about feet on the floor, that's sheiros, that's service, that's temple service, and ein derech sheiros bekach, that's not the way it's done. Okay, the Tosfos, anyway, it's the third Tosfos on the summit that discusses that point. Okay, let's continue in the Mishnah. Mincha shelo nikmetzah v'hikriva b'chutz pater. Okay, I have a karban mincha. Now again, we're going to be discussing this at length in the next Masechta, but with every karban mincha, so what do? So I take off the kamitza, I burn the kometz on, when I say I mean the Kohen. I burn the kamitza on the mizbeach, and then the rest of it is eaten by the Kohanim. That's called the shirayim. Okay, let's say the Kohen takes the entire mincha, not having done kometz, throws it on top of the mizbeach. Okay, he for sure, that is it's malpractice. The question, and it's not a question, because I'm going to answer in just a moment, is that gross malpractice? Meaning, can he get any kind of check whatsoever for what he just did? Here's the argument you can make. Well, I had to burn the kamitza. I just didn't separate the kamitza, but it got burnt. So on the mizbeach. What we're about to learn together is no. That's not. That argument doesn't work. In other words, even though the kamitza is in there, it is only recognized as kamitza only after the kohen does the kometz. Only after he does the kamitza. Prior to that point in time, it's amorphous. It doesn't have any identity. So the Gemara says, if I took a mincha where kamitza was not done, and I offered that outside, I'm going to be pater. Which is just another way of saying that if I offered it inside, the Kohen receives absolutely no check whatsoever. Meaning it's not fit, it's not qualified to be offered inside. And again, because it's not qualified to be offered inside, therefore you're not violating Hela B'chutz. You know, really, by the way, you know what Hela B'chutz really is, by the way? It's a referendum on what works in the Azara. Meaning whatever works in the Azara is what you're going to be liable for Hela B'chutz. And if it doesn't work in the Azara, I'm not liable for Hela B'chutz. So really, a lot of this perek, we're going over, once again, this idea of what works inside, and if it does work inside, I violate Hela B'chutz outside. So mincha shel nikmatz v'hikriva b'chutz pater, kamtza v'chazer kamtza l'socha, v'hikriva b'chutz chayef. Now here, this falls under the category of malpractice, but not gross malpractice. Let's say the Kohen did the kamitza, took the fistful of flour, and then what he did is, he threw it right back into the mincha. At least, and he takes the whole thing and he throws it onto the mizbeach. Okay, so...
Bizarre.
Okay, yeah, it's bizarre. It's bizarre behavior. And you know, we're gonna have to try to talk to this Kohen. So no, it's not a mincha belong to a Kohen. In other words, it's a mincha. In other words, the shiram should not have been put onto the mizbeach. But the point is, however, is that because he did the kamitza, so therefore now it has an identity. And even though he threw it back inside, it still retains its identity. And the Gemara is going to ask the question: what about the idea of bittul? The Gemara will ask that question. So, but in other words, but it still retains its identity. And so therefore, if it puts it onto Mizbech, he's going to now get a check for having burned the Kemitza. If he offers it outside now, you get the violation of Hela B'chutz. Okay. Ve'amai, Gemara asked the question, Libat le'shirayim le'komets. In the second case of the Mishnah, where the Kohen took the komets and threw it right back into the Mincha, and it got mixed back into the Mincha, so why don't we use the concept of Bittul? And now the komets should be nullified, right? So Amar Rabbi Zera, Nemra Haktara b'Komets v'Nemra Haktara b'Shirayim. Ma Haktara Komets in Komets mevato chavero. Af Haktara Shirayim in Shirayim mevatlin Komets. So the Gemara says that the Shirayim is not going to be mevato Komets. Now Rashi over here, now I can say the Rashi. Rashi over here connects us to an idea that we've gone over numerous times throughout Shas. And that is this idea that when it comes to blood, ein da mevato blood, blood does not nullify blood. Meaning, on Yom Kippur, the blood of the goat and the blood of the bull, at one point during the Avodas Yom Kippur, are mixed together. We are going to assume that there's a lot more bull blood than there is goat blood. And meanwhile, the Torah says you mix them together because I need a blending of the two. Now, isn't the goat blood going to lose its identity simply because it's the minority and not the majority? And we keep learning again and again, no, it doesn't lose its identity. The Torah says it doesn't lose its identity. And from here, we have a general rule throughout Shas that when I have min bimino, so we don't, it's not subject to bittul. Now, it's an interesting note, by the way. Generally speaking, we assign that to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. And generally speaking, we say that there are those who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda. But probably, I mean, Rashi doesn't say all this. This is coming from me, which means it could be wrong. But generally, I think what that means is, meaning, are we ready to extend the idea to other areas in the Torah? But certainly by blood, everyone's in agreement. The Torah tells us. The Dam Seir and the Dam Par are mixed together, and the Dam Seir still retains its identity. Here, too, if I'm taking the Kemitza, which was at one point in time part and parcel of the Mincha, and I put it back into the Mincha, so it's not going to be subject to Bittul. I know you can't recognize it, but I'm burning it.
Yeah. The question is the status of the kamitza. The instant you pick up from the dish changes.
Yeah, in other words, they're right. In other words, of course it changes. In other words, now it's a kamitza. Now it's a kamitz to be burnt on the mizbech. The rest of the mincha is not to be burnt on the mizbech. Okay, let's continue. Hakomitz v'alavona sheikri v'sechan mehem b'chutz chayiv. Okay. Well, for your standard mincha, as I already noted earlier this morning, but we're going to get to learn it together now as well. So there are two matirin. On a standard mincha, so you after the flour goes into the kli shares with the oil, and again, it really depends on what kind of mincha is, that will define how it's prepared, but in any event. So you put the flour into the kli shares, and then you sprinkle on top of it a fistful of lavona, and then you collect the lavona. It's a type of spice. It's a type of incense. It's frankincense, it's called. So then you take the lavona, after you put it on top, you then collect it again. You burn that on top of the mizbech. Then you do the kamitza, and then you take a fistful of the flour and you burn it on the mizbech as well. So for every standard mincha, you have really two matirin. You have komet and you have lavona. And here we get to a discussion that we had earlier in the Masechta, but we get to have again. What if I take one of the matirim and I offer it outside? So it's chatzi matir. So what do we say regarding chatzi matir? We discussed it earlier, but remember, earlier we discussed it in the context of pigol. Now we're discussing it in the context of hela b'chutz. So according to the Tanakhama, if I take either the Lavona or the Komets and I offer it one of the two outside, so I'm going to be Chayiv, meaning even though it only represents Chatzi Matir, but still, you're going to be Chayiv. Rabbi Eliezer Poter Achi Yakriv Etzasheni. Now you knew this was coming, because this Rabbi Eliezer fits in perfectly with what we learned earlier this morning. According to Rabbi Eliezer, no, that's only half the Matir. In other words, by matir, and according to Rabbi Eliezer, you're only chayav hela b'chutz when you offer the entire matir. Echa b'fnim ve'echa b'chutz chayav. If you offered one of them inside, and you offered the second one outside, you're going to be chayav, and even Rabbi Eliezer would agree. Why? Because this second one that you offered outside represents the rest of it. And once you offer the rest of it, so now, even Rabbi Eliezer says, of course, you're going to be chayav. Okay, we're going to do the same thing again, but now we're moving to the Lechem Apanim. Lechem Apanim, offered weekly, it's not offered. In other words, but the Lechem Apanim is baked 12 loaves, placed on the Shulchan in the Beis HaMikdash every Shabbos. What did we do with last week? We take it out, right? And when we get to Masechta Menachos, we're going to give a wonderful description of how the new bread goes in, the old bread comes out, almost at the same time. And then the lechem is divided amongst the Kohanim. Last week's Mishmar gets 6 loaves, and this week's Mishmar gets 6 loaves, although that's subject to a machlokus. I think some have it as 7 and 5. In any event, the Kohanim cannot eat any of the lechem upon him until we offer the matir. What's the matir of the lechem upon him? There were 2 spoonfuls of lavona that were placed on the lechem upon him, and they need to be burnt on the Mizbeach in order for the Kohanim to eat the lechem upon him. So here now we have 2 spoonfuls. So what do we have? 2 matirin. Spoon number 1 and spoon number 2. So shnei bezich levona sheikr v'zechel mehem b'chutz chai rabbi lozer poter achi yakr v'zasheni. And it's the same achlokas. It's just, the Gemara is just giving another example. I'm sorry, the Mishnah is giving another example. So if I offer spoonful number 1 outside, either one, doesn't matter. So according to the chachamim, you violated hala b'chutz. That should have been burned inside. And according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's not the totality, and you're only violating hela b'chutz when you're offering, only when you offer the totality of the matir, meaning spoons 1 and 2.
Is it 1 matir with 2 divisions, or is it 2 matir and it's 2 different things?
Right, I totally hear your question. And maybe that's why the Mishnah is giving this as a second example, to tell us that it's viewed as 2. Echa b'fnei ve'echa b'chutz chayav.
They're identical.
Yeah, right. That could very well, because it's funny, I was wondering why the Mishnah has to give us another example, but that could very well be the reason why, in order to demonstrate that at that very point. And then, if I offered 1 spoon inside, meaning I burn it like kimitzvah, so like I should have, and then I take the other spoon and I burn it outside, everyone's going to agree that you violate hela b'chutz. Because even though it's only 1 matir, but it's the second matir, meaning it's completion. So everyone agrees that you violate hela b'chutz. By Rav Yitzchak Nafcha, Komets Mao Shiyatir Kenegda B'Shirayim. Okay, the Gemara here has really a great discussion, classic discussion. I'm presenting the Gemara like Rashi. Tosfos doesn't agree with Rashi, but like I do traditionally. I mean, it's our mission statement in the Daf. In other words, just present it like Rashi. So, let's say on a standard mincha, so I offered 1 of the 2 matirin. So, can I now eat half the mincha? And basically, in other words, look, in order to consume the entire mincha, I have to offer both the komets and lavona. That part's clear. In other words, but how do we look at the 1-2 punch combination? Is one knockout half of the shirayim, and the other matir knocks out the other half? I don't mean knocks out, but I mean allows, permits the other half, or no? In other words, is the 1-2 combination punch like in a boxing fight? In other words, one stuns him, and the second one knocks him out. And so maybe that's the way to look at these 2 matirim. In other words, one is the Gemara's terminology is it's maklish. It weakens it. And then the second matir gives a total allowance for the rest of it. So by Rav Yitzchak Nafcha, Komet Mashiach to connect the Bishirai Mishra Shari or Kalushe Miklash. So how do we look at this 1-2 combination of the two matirin of your standard mincha? Aliba de Mani, Aliba de Reb Meir, Damer Mefagel Mechatzi Matir Mishra Shari. So the Gemara says, now let's go way back to the Masechta, where we discussed being Mefagel and Achatzi Matir. That's the Shita of Reb Meir, which we discussed earlier in the Masechta. Now he says that you can create Pigol, even though you had the Machshava only during one of the two Matirs, half the Matir, if you will. So then, for sure, Mishra Shari. He for sure views each matir as significant, and with each matir you're allowed to eat half the shirayim. You know, now you can ask me the question about Breira. Now you can ask me. Not that I know the answer, but at least now you can ask me. Now, according to the Chachamim, in other words, you can't do pickle with chatzi matir. So, in other words, according to the Chachamim, chatzi matir by itself is nothing. Right, even though half is generally a significant fraction, but according to the Chachamim, if I cannot be mefagel chatzi matir is just viewed as nothing yet. Right, only when I do both is it going to be significant. Ela aliba de Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbanan Sfirle, da amar ein mefagel chatzi matir. The Gemara says, yeah, but I also happen to know that Rabbi Eliezer agrees with the Chachamim that you can't do pickle with chatzi matir. Ela aliba de Rabbanan da hacha. So now, the question here is, according to our Chachamim, meaning let's take the Chachamim of our mission that we just learned together. Because the Chachamim say that if I take one of the matirim and I bring it outside, I violate Hela B'chutz. What does that show me? It shows me that one matir, according to the Chachamim, is significant. So now that it's significant, now I get to ask the question. So is it mean that it's significant, i.e. it gives a full allowance to eat half the mincha? Or significant, meaning that it just simply weakens it so that the second matir now can kick in. So the Gemara says, take it. The Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Okay, hazorik mitzvahs dam b'chutz chayav. Okay, what if I take some blood and sprinkle it outside? We learned together, back in Kuf Zayin, that not only is one violation of shchut echutz and hela b'chutz, but also zrika as well. Right, machlok is Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael, in terms of where this is derived from. Either the pasuk of dam yicheshev, or it's derived from o zevach, but either way, Zrika is also in this, literally in this chapter of Hela B'chutz, or Shchut Echutz. So the Mishnah now talks about, what if I take a little bit of blood, meaning even just one application, and sprinkle it outside, so you're going to be Chayef. So, now, remember, this is a Matir. And so Rashi over here points out on the very top of the Amud, that this is going according to the Chachamim, that you don't need the entire matir to be offered outside in order to be chayiv. Now, interesting, Rashi tells us, Rabbi Eliezer is going to agree when it comes to the blood. The Gemara is going to explain why. Rabbi Eliezer Omer af ha-menasech. And Rabbi Eliezer says, even nisuch, which we're going af ha-menasech me'achag b'chag b'chutz chayiv. If let's say I take water that should have gone on the Mizbeach, the 7 days of Sukkos, water is offered every day on the Mizbeach, right? The mitzvah of Nisuch Hamayim. A mitzvah, however, which we're going to discuss, we'll discuss it more tomorrow morning. A mitzvah which is not mentioned in the Torah. Meaning a mitzvah d'oraisa, which is not mentioned in the Torah. Now, that's interesting. Hamitzvah d'oraisa not mentioned in the Torah. Mm-hmm. So what? How do we file that under? So one way to file under is Halach L'Moshe Misinai. There's another possibility, which we're going to be discussing tomorrow, in terms of where does this mitzvah come from. But it's a mitzvah in the Torah. So if I'm menasek me'achag b'chag b'chutz chayiv. So Rabbi Eliezer says that if I take water that was supposed to go on the Mizbech on Sukkos, and I bring it outside, so you're going to be chayiv, even though it's just water. But that's something that should have gone on the Mizbech. Rabbi Nechemia Omer Shayare Adam Shikriva b'chutz chayiv. Rabbi Nechemia is of the opinion that that if I have any shayari dam, meaning after the applications of a carbon chatas, by the way, it's not just limited to carbon chatas. In other words, but if I have leftover blood, so that blood is poured onto the yisod hamizbech, if I take that blood and I offer it outside according to Reb Nechemia, that too is going to be a violation of zrika b'chutz, and one is going to be chayiv. Okay. Amar Rav Amod Rabbi Elazar b'damim. Now, we point that Rashi already taught us back in the Mishnah, but now we're going to see the Gemara inside, And that is, as Rabbi Elazar agrees, by blood. Now that's a big chiddush, right? Because we've learned not once but twice this morning that whenever we're talking about a matir, so the Chachamim say as long as it's a significant amount, you're going to be chayiv. Right? When it comes to Imurim and Kazayas, when it comes to Ketores and Kazayas. So in other words, it just has to be a significant amount, right? The only thing is, as we learned earlier this morning, can't be chaser. But in other words, but you offer a significant amount, that's fine. And twice this morning, we learned that according to Rabbi Eliezer, you have to offer the entire matir outside in order to be chayiv. If it's not the entire matir, you're not going to be chayiv. And meanwhile, when it comes to dam, when it comes to the zrikas adam, so even a little bit, Rabbi Eliezer would agree. And why should that be? Amar Rav Moda, Rabbi Elazar b'damim, d'tanya Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, omrim, memakam shepasuk u'maschel. This is an idea that we learned earlier in the Masechta. We get to learn it again and review it. The idea is that let's say I have any of the inner chatas blood, and it goes through a whole process of sprinkling, right? Let's go with the Yom Kippur blood, okay? Because there's really a lot of sprinkling to do. Eight applications of each, and this is done both with the blood of the goat and the bull. Eight applications are done in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Another eight are done on the Parochas, right? Echalamala v'shevalamata. And another seven are done on the Mizbeach, another four on the top of the Mizbeach, and then, right? And
43 or 48.
Right? 43, 48, 43, 47, 48. Those were our big numbers. So, and what happens if at the course of any of the procedure, any of the proceedings, so the Kohen Gadol spilled the blood. He's human. He spilled the blood. And irrevocable. And so what do you do? So what you do is as follows. According to both Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Elazar, you go out, you get a new whatever we need, a goat or a bull, you shecht it, you collect the blood, and where do you pick up from? You don't have to start from number one. You pick it up from where you left off. Because every one of the hazaas, every one of the sprinklings that are done are significant, and so therefore you only need to pick it up where you left off. Good. Once we say that, and that's according to Rabbi Elazar, so then point made, point proven. Meaning so that if I took any one of the azaos and did it outside of the Beis HaMikdash, so you're going to be chayiv, and even Rabbi Elazar would agree to this point. Okay.
Even if you completed the entire
azaos. Oh, right.
Even if I did all of them? Need for it.
Right. So then maybe not. Maybe not. But the Gemara's point is that each one of them now becomes significant. Okay. We'll stop over here tomorrow. We'll pick it up with the mitzvah of Nisach HaMayim. Okay, great discussion coming up. And the learning that we do this morning should be Le'ilui Nishmas,
Avner Ben
Shalom,
and Refuah
Shlema,
Moshe Yosef
Ben Shena.